Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. Here's the podcast for Connecting Faith. Enjoy the conversation.
Real conversations about how we live out our faith every day. Welcome to Connecting Faith.
Well, good afternoon and welcome to Connecting Faith. I'm Joe Bender in for Neil Stavem this week. So glad to have you join us today. Well, let me ask you a question. Have you ever wished that there was a how-to book on parenting? I know that I've often wished that. I had a three-step process for virtually every challenge that comes up, but I've found that those do not exist. And everyone's problems might be a little bit different. Everyone's challenges are as well. Well, my guest for today poses a different kind of question. He asks, well, what if God uses children to teach parents? Interesting question. I feel like maybe God's been using my kids to teach me a lot of things. Maybe you feel the same as well, that parenting might be more a school for spiritual formation and our children are our teachers. Well, let me tell you about my guest for today, and we'll get him on the show to talk about his book, Sacred Parenting. Gary Thomas is our guest for today. He's a writer in residence and a member of the teaching team at Second Baptist Church in Houston, Texas. He's also the author of 18 books, including best-selling Sacred Marriage that has sold more than a million copies worldwide and been translated into a dozen languages. He and his wife Lisa have been married for more than 30 years, and you can find Gary writing at GaryThomas.com. We'll have a link to his website and his information on our website at MyFaithRadio.com. Gary, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Joe. Thanks for having me.
Well, it's great to have you. And I was telling Gary off the air that I was a little nervous to read his book because I knew the premise of Sacred Marriage was that marriage does not exist to make us happy, but to make us holy. And I thought, oh no, that means that parenting is designed not to make me happy, but maybe to make me holy as well. What is the premise of your book, Sacred Parenting, Gary?
Well, you've hinted at it very well. It really is to turn the tables around. Because the Bible doesn't really provide one how-to model for raising our kids, it presents the model that we're to model to our kids what real faith and real personal growth and spiritual growth is. And so I just turn the tables and say, what if parenting is partly about God using kids to help raise the parents rather than parents just raising the kids? It's not a vision of us having arrived and pulling our kids up to where we are, but parent and child together under the grace of God, growing together in Christ and becoming better people because they've lived in the same family.
Well, you also write that the what of parenting is certainly more important than the how to. Can you unpack that a little bit for us?
Right. I think motivation is everything with parenting. If we go into parenting with selfish motivation, we want to be proud of our kids. We're hoping our kids will love us in return. We hope they'll make us happy. We hope it'll be fun, all of those things. Those motivations will be crushed by just about every kid, probably before the 9th birthday, certainly before the 16th. Those are going to go down. But if I see parenting as a call that God has given me to engage in, to honor him, to serve him, we're told in Malachi that he wants us to keep our marriages together in part because he desires godly offspring. Now, that doesn't guarantee that we'll have godly offspring, but it tends to create godlier offspring when they come from a more stable home. So throughout Scripture, there's a sense of look at parenting as something you're doing for God. And since God always deserves to be reverenced, we're always going to be engaged in parenting. If our kids push us off, if our kids go into a period of silence, if our kids break our heart, they're still not going to stop us from parenting because our motivation for parenting is oriented toward God even more than what we get out of parenting.
Well, it's certainly not something that we get to walk away from if we've had some uncomfortable circumstances. And I mean, that can start from very early on when we have that little baby who we think is going to snuggle with us and sleep well, that all of a sudden they're not doing those things and we still need to stick with them. And it seems like that continues at all different stages of life, that I've never felt so unprepared and unqualified for something in my life than when I had a child. Is that kind of universal?
Well, I think it is. And I've seen, just as a pastor, I've seen a lot of parents give up active parenting around about 12 or 13 years old. They're just frustrated. They'll feed their kids, they'll clothe their kids, But the whole notion about being passionately involved and engaged in a training way, that tends to go down. And I felt what you did. I think it's what led me to write Sacred Parenting, and it actually was the hope I had behind parenting, is that I so wanted to be a good parent. I mean, with all my heart, I wanted to be the best dad in the world that I could be. And yet I realized I didn't have the wisdom, I didn't have the patience, I didn't have the understanding. You know, those TV dads that always had the right thing to say with just the right touch of humor, but the right touch of forcefulness. It's just not me. And so in one sense, it was freeing when I realized the Bible doesn't really give us this how-to where we have to be everything. For me, where I was failing, I think, is, and what made me so afraid, is that I was trying to be a Messiah to my kids. I wanted to be the father figure who had all the answers, who had it all together. But the job of Messiah is taken, and it was taken very well. It's fulfilled by Jesus Christ. I'm called to be a messenger to point my kids to the Messiah. Instead of being Jesus to my kids, I'm to point them to Jesus, which might mean when I mess up, I ask for their forgiveness. I explain how Christ's grace covers us all, and they see that God is working on both their dad and themselves, that spiritual growth and the basics of faith in Christ, following him, but then asking for forgiveness when we mess up, receiving his grace, starting over again, that's throughout all of life. It's not just when you're young, but parents face it too.
Well, in fact, one of the chapters you titled Listen Carefully, How Raising Children Teaches Us to Listen to God. And it's true, isn't it, that like I was saying at the beginning, there's really not a how to do these three steps and you'll be successful as a parent. But one step that is essential is that we need to listen to God. So how does raising children teach us to listen to him?
Well, we tend to do what we need to do. And I think raising kids will push all of us past our normal wisdom, our normal understanding. And Joe, I won't deny the supernatural element, that sometimes God can reveal what's going on in our kids' hearts, that we're just going along, we're busy with our days, we're busy with our marriages, we're busy with our businesses and all of that. And if we're sitting before the Lord and lifting our kids up on a regular basis, God might just kind of nudge us. Might just put a little thought in our heart. Have you ever thought about this relationship or this friend or this issue where your child seems a little sad or your child seems a little discouraged and can really begin to open up to us? Well, you know what? Maybe I need to see that. It's really the process of realizing that God is our partner in parenting. He's not just someone who died 2,000 years ago and left us a book with principles to follow and we apply the principles and it'll be okay. But someone who wants to be actively and truly involved. And so I think because we need to listen to the Lord, it keeps us closer to, okay, Lord, what is that? If we feel like we've done something 100 times and we've got it mastered, we don't even think about getting help. But when we're in an arena where we feel like, you know what, I'm just not sure, that's when God can become more real to us. And it kind of turns us to listen to him just because we need to.
Mm. That's true. I do tend to talk to God and listen to God a lot more when I'm in an arena where I'm completely unfamiliar. I find myself right now, though, Gary, sometimes praying that my son will listen to God, that he will speak so loudly that my son can't possibly not listen to him because he doesn't seem to be listening to me. I'm not sure that that's in your book. How do you feel about that?
You know, I think one of the hardest answers to prayer I ever heard, I was praying earnestly for one of my children, and I felt the Lord telling me, that prayer is going to be answered, but you're not the answer to that prayer. And stepping back and realizing that God might bring somebody else to speak that truth into my kid's life. He might bring a pastor, a friend, another adult, somebody else, or basically God was saying, I've got this. Promise, you want to bring the solution, and you're not going to be the solution in this. Now, as our kids get older, that's kind of what it's like. We're sort of letting the rope out and trusting that God is involved in their life, and sometimes what we really want is for us to be the answer to their problems, and sometimes it's not. But I found it's just to dedicate myself to the Lord, to listen to God, to be faithful, to sort of inspire our kids with our own faith. Let it be genuine. Let it be authentic. Let them see the life giving presence of Jesus Christ, and hope that will invite them along. When you look at how the Bible talks about influence, It's usually as setting up a model. In 1 Peter 3:1, wives are told to be examples to their husbands who aren't as mature as they are. In John 13, Jesus said, I've set you an example that you should do as I have done for you. So he said, I've been an example, follow that. Paul told the Corinthians to follow his example as he followed Christ. And then he told two young pastors, Timothy and Titus, that basically they needed to be examples for their flock. And so that's why it's important to look at parenting through the sacred parenting model, that ironically, the best how-to in raising our kids is dealing with our own stuff, dealing with our own anger, dealing with our own pride, dealing with our own fear. And then as models, we're calling our children to greater growth themselves.
Well, there you go again. You're teaching me how to be holy. It's a good lesson for parents. It's also a nice way for parents to realize that God is doing a great work both in our kids and in us. I'm talking to Gary Thomas today. He's author of Sacred Parenting, as well as 17 other books, including Sacred Marriage. He's a writer in residence and serves on the teaching team at Second Baptist Church in Houston, Texas. We're going to be back to talk to Gary about parenting. If you're listening along, maybe you have a question for Gary. We can take that on the show, 877-933-2484. Otherwise, we also have a nice handful of books to give away that both Gary and his publisher Zondervan have given to us to give to you. We'd love to get that in your hands. Again, give us a call, 877-933-2484. We'll be right back on Connecting Faith.
I'm gonna watch you shine, gonna watch you grow, gonna paint a sign so you'll always know. As long as one and one is two, there could never be a father love his daughter more than I love you.
Welcome back to Connecting Faith. I'm Joe Bender talking to Gary Thomas today about his book, Sacred Parenting, How Raising Children Shapes Our Souls. What if we looked at parenting that way, as a school for spiritual formation? You know, Gary, a lot of times people pray for their child's protection to keep them safe, or maybe to keep our kids from experiencing hurt or pain or failure. But that can sometimes have a devastating effect, can't it?
It can. And I think that's most of our prayers. I found a third prayer that was just important, just to maintain sort of a spiritual balance, might be the way to put it. And that is prayers of thanksgiving for how I see God moving in our kids' lives. And I think, frankly, Joe, that's a key to marriage. How do you learn to appreciate an imperfect person? How do you learn to raise and encourage an imperfect kid? How do you learn to be a faithful citizen in an imperfect nation? We seem to be going through a time where if the spouse isn't perfect, the kid isn't perfect, the nation isn't perfect, we're not going to show it any honor at all. Just forget it. But really, to encourage, to be a friend, to be a parent to our kids, we have to learn how to be thankful for those things we see in our life. Yeah, we want them to grow. We realize there is so much more that they could do. But I've just found it's helpful to sit before the Lord. Lord, thank you that I see this in my son's life. Thank you that I see this in my daughter's life, because it reminds me that God is active. I see evidences of his grace in their life. And it changes the way I look at them, which changes the way I speak to them. I become one of their chief encouragers. Joe, I feel like one of the things that amazes me so much about the Lord is his constant daily forgiveness. I can have one of the worst days, and God finds a way of convicting me while still being encouraging. There's just something about God, when he convicts, it lifts you up, it builds you up, rather than making you feel like a complete idiot and discouraging you with despair. And so that's the way we have to look at parenting. How can we recognize our kids' frailties, but still be their chief encouragers? It's the way that God treats us. It's the way we need to treat our kids.
So instead of thinking that my son is maybe being a little stubborn, I should be thankful for his willingness to trust his own judgment and not have to rely on me?
Well, that's one way. I mean, it might be that he's too stubborn, but then I'm looking for other things. You know what? She really is thoughtful. He really is sensitive. She was really kind to her friend the other day. It's just trying to remind ourselves what we don't want. If our kids only hear the negative, if they only hear what we want them to do better, they start to feel like projects, and they start to feel discouraged. And basically, they start to feel like they're being raised by Pharisees who only look at what they're possibly doing wrong. There's just great spiritual good to be had when we can become chief encouragers with our kids. We say, you know what? I saw how you handled your temper there. I think a year or two ago, you would have just lost it. But you really did well in handling your anger in an appropriate way. I just want you to know I caught it. I thank God. He's active in your life. And acknowledge it. We almost never let an act of disobedience go by without mentioning it. And I'm not saying we shouldn't. But how many acts of righteousness and holiness and evidences of God's grace do we let go by without mentioning it? I just think we need to bring up that balance a little bit.
Boy, there's such a great parallel with that to not only our kids, but with our spouses as well, and recognizing all of those things that have gone right, isn't there?
Well, it's what gives life in a marriage. In fact, I have a whole chapter in my book, Sacred Influence for Wives, that talks about how do you appreciate an imperfect man? Because it's so easy to look at, because the Bible says we all stumble in many ways, James 3:2. Every spouse has a lot of areas where they mess up, where they hurt, where they fail. And so the idea is, how do you maintain appreciation for somebody who's not perfect? And that's the basis out of which a good marriage becomes great. But if we start to define our spouse by how they fail us rather than where they excel, well, that sort of shapes the way we look at them. Psychologists have proved this. What we focus on really does impact the way we feel about somebody, which means, I know this sounds crazy, but in one sense, you can pray your marriage sick. You can pray your relationship with your kids sick if you only pray about the negative and don't thank God for the positive.
That is such good advice just for really any relationship that we have with anyone, because sometimes I feel like I can get really frustrated with a parent and want to do the as a parent and do the absolute opposite, which is stop giving praise, stop giving encouragement, and just kind of shut down. And that's not going to help anything, is it?
No, at least I haven't found it too.
I haven't either. I think I might be able to write a half of a chapter on how that does not work. It starts to break down the relationship a lot more than it seems to build it up, Gary.
Well, and you know, it's a discouraging world. We're not raising our kids in the Garden of Eden so that we can just help fine-tune them. I just remember one time I was going for a run out in some national park somewhere. I was out on a speaking trip, and there was a junior high, or maybe it was late middle school, some field trip going on, and the trails were small, so the teacher, hey kids, move over while I went through. So I ran through, just running through the negative comments that I heard students saying about each other. It made me sensitive. A lot of times we don't realize the world our kids grow up in, where kids can be vicious against each other. You've got cyberbullying. They're accused by Satan, who's often the great accuser, about how they're failing. Maybe if you have a sensitive child, he or she is accusing themselves. Our kids get beat up everywhere they go. And so we have to be careful that we don't just continue that in our homes, but that we're encouragers, that we're breathing life, that we're home is a place where they can breathe and know grace and grow. The grace of the gospel, unmerited favor, received even though we don't deserve it, that really should color every Christian home. It's the environment out of which we can grow. It's the environment that is healing. And it's the environment ultimately leads to even better growth. Just piling on insult after insult usually makes kids want to give up. But when we go from a platform of grace, they're more willing to hear the words of challenge and correction.
That's such a good word and such a good reminder for all of us, because parenting seems to bring some real emotions to the surface that are sometimes stronger than I want them to be. And you can't really ignore them either. How does parenting help us to deal with those strong emotions? Or maybe there's some tools that you could give us that would help us deal with those strong emotions.
I know right what you're referring to. I know a pastor who had a church of 200 and 300, so a good-sized church. But he could know most of the people in that church because of the numbers. And he preached a sermon on anger one time, and at this church they invite people forward if they want prayer for that sermon. 19 people came up for prayer following that sermon. It was a sermon on anger. And he just laughed because every one of the people that came forward was a mother of toddlers. and there's something about parenting where anger can sort of be just almost automatic because we care so much. And because of our fears, we know the trouble they can get themselves into. And it's because we care that we get so angry. And so I think we can look at parenting as a gift that we have to learn, okay, this is how I deal with this anger. For me, not just anger, but fear. I mean, everything that can happen from before the child is born, you're worried about miscarriage, then you're worried about SIDS, then you're worried about toddlers, you know, tripping over themselves or sticking a fork in the socket, and then they start to get older and somebody's going to kidnap them, and then they become teenagers and they can drive and somebody else can smash into them. I mean, the fears never stop, and just about the time we think we can breathe, we have grandkids and we start all over again. And so it really is a way for us to learn how to trust God, the God who is provident, how we learn to deal with our anger in an appropriate way. Those are some of the lessons I don't know that I could have learned without being a parent, because I don't know that I've ever dealt with anger like I did as a parent, or I ever dealt with fear as I did as a parent. In fact, we talk about fear. I mentioned how when I was a young single man, and I would hear about Joshua and Caleb urging Israel on. You know, they were the spies. They went into the promised land. They said, yeah, the people who are there, they're big, they're powerful, but with God, we can take them on. We can do it. And I always thought that's where I would want to be. Then when I had a wife and daughter, two daughters and a son, and I read what their objections were, you know what, these people are big. If we lose, they're going to have their way with our wives. Who knows what they're going to do with our daughters? I thought, wait a minute here. It's one thing for me to risk defeat. It's another thing if at the end of that defeat, my wife and daughters are left completely unprotected. And so suddenly I realized fear takes on a whole new form. I began to read the Bible through entirely a new set of eyes.
I remember reading the Bible, too, just writing down all the passages on how God could protect my children, because you do start to think of life so differently when you have these little people that you want to protect, that you care for, that you lay down your life for. And it is a very different feeling, something that I didn't really expect when I decided that I was going to have children. And so when I read your words that say that raising children does shape our souls and or make us holy, as I was translating it, it just seems so true, and that God knows exactly what he's doing when he starts us off with those small problems with the small kids and learning to deal with our insecurities, fears, and anger, and then graduating us up to bigger kids with bigger problems. And I'm just so grateful that he started us that way so that I can deal more fully and better with my kids now that they're teenagers. Gary, we have to take a quick break, but we'll be back with Gary Thomas and his book, Sacred Parenting, How Raising Children Shapes Our Souls. If you're listening today and you'd like to get a copy of his book in your hands, well, he and his publisher, Zondervan, have graciously donated several for our listeners. You can give us a call at 877-933-2484, and we'll be right back on Connecting Faith. You are changing the world, one little heartbeat at a time, making history with every touch and every smile. Oh, you may not see it now, but I believe that time will tell how you are changing the world, one little heartbeat at a time. Well, welcome back to Connecting Faith. I'm Joe Bender, and I'm talking to Gary Thomas today. Gary's written a book called Sacred Parenting, How Raising Children Shapes Our Souls, under the premise that we are learning from parenting as much as our kids are learning from us. Gary, you write such a beautiful chapter in your book about just how raising children teaches us what really matters in life. And I think about the times that I worry about my job or the impact I'm making in the world somehow. And you kind of brought us back to those boring genealogies in the Bible that just list the names of people. How does that relate to what's important in life?
Well, it was jarring for me when I realized that. In Genesis chapter 5, there's just this long list of names. And the only names we have are, we have so-and-so lived so long, had sons and daughters, and then died. And then they were the father of so-and-so and such, lived this amount of years and died. We don't know whether they were happily married. We don't know if they were tradesmen. We don't know if they were businessmen. We don't know if they were athletes or scholars. We just know that they lived, had sons and daughters, died, and got out of the way. And the reality is, that is a very honest picture of human experience. We won't be remembered by history. Very few, I mean, less than one half of 1% of us will ever be a figure that will be remembered, and not even as long. Now, people think of all the people who are famous now. Well, certainly the presidents will be famous and whatnot. And then I just ask them to talk about Chester Arthur, and half the people, unless they memorize names in a list of some political science class long ago, they don't know what Chester Arthur did. They don't know what party he was from. They don't know what his policies were. That even the highest level and highest achievement individuals often are swallowed up in history. Now, rather than be discouraging, for me what that did is it said, okay, I can focus on relationships and my faith in the Lord. That's what's eternal. And so for businesses, I was just overcome by one guy who worked for a company. He died in his late 40s of a sudden heart attack, and his coworker said it was like he never existed. We gave our lives to the company. We knew if we ever said no, they would replace us and we wouldn't get an advancement. And yet once he died, they brought in a new person the next day, and it was like he was never even there. And I realized that my kids would never feel that way. My wife wouldn't feel that way. And so I needed to focus, rather than trying to be significant at work or being significant in the world or whatnot, that the biblical reality is about relationships, seeking first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, because God won't forget. God does reward in heaven, not just on earth. And then being true to my families, to my wife and to my kids. And so it just changed my life. It freed me up from where I'm worried about significance. When I realized, you know what, I'm not going to be significant, but I can love. It changed the way I valued my how I ordered my schedule and what I valued about getting done.
Well, and Gary, it seems like there are sometimes times in parenting where it can also create a lot of stress on our marriage. If we're stressed about something that's happening with our kids, we could have some stress on our marriage. I'm wondering if you can combine your wisdom on your two books, Sacred Marriage and Sacred Parenting. Just talk about, what do we do with that stress that parenting puts on our marriage, and how can we put those into perspective?
Well, I was just very grateful to be able to raise kids with my wife. And I feel for the single parents who are listening. I can't imagine a more difficult job, because sometimes I think what helped so much for me was just the tag team approach. And sometimes I would just be beside myself, or I would be out of patience and my wife could step in. Sometimes she would be the one who's frustrated and I step in. And just being able to do it together as brother and sister in Christ. And then we see where our kids are now. We so often, in spite of us, not because of us, it's just overwhelmingly fulfilling. It's amazing. And so I would think, just encourage each other, have a tag team approach, look out for each other. You recognize when your spouse is sort of at their end, that's the time for you to step in. That's mm-hmm. one of the best ways you can love them. And I think for husbands in particular, I hear this often from wives, they can be so angry at their husbands, and then the husband will come in and just love on his kids, and the wife's heart melts almost in a frustrating way, because I wanted to be angry at him. But then when I see him do that to my son or my daughter, my heart just melts and I love him all over again. And so, guys, one of the best ways to our wives' hearts is to be simply a good dad. It means a lot to them. Then finally, the thing I would say, I'm speaking as an empty nester, Joe. If you put your marriage on hold for the sake of parenting, you're going to realize how much of life you have left with your spouse when the kids aren't there to talk about every day. Lisa and I never actually looked forward to becoming empty nesters. We know a lot of couples do, and I'm not knocking that, but we loved being active parents, and it was a little sad for us as we looked at those days rather than with excitement. But I got to tell you, I am so grateful that we kept our marriage a priority, even the main priority, because life is just too long after kids to say that you're just going to put your marriage on the shelf and then pick it up. It would have been terrifying to me if when our last child left home, we looked at each other and said, who are you and what do we have in common? So I would say, for selfish reasons, if nothing else, keep your marriage a priority. Don't put it on the shelf. You serve your kids best. You serve yourself best by making that marriage a priority.
That's such great advice. And, you know, there's nothing that makes me smile more than when someone says something nice about our kids. And my husband will jump right in and say, well, that's because of her. And, you know, I'll do the same for him as well. And to know that we did this together, we will also lay our heads on the pillows together and look at each other like, what are we doing? But there's like this kindred spirit that you have because you know that your spouse sees what you see. And to know that you're just getting through this and doing the best that you can together. Some are going to be better at some things. Some will be better at one will be better at another. But to know you have a partner in this whole journey somehow makes it a little more palatable in the good times and in the not so good times.
And what I love is when, you know, we've talked about the difficulties, but we just had an instance with one of our children where God is using him in some powerful ways. And just as he was talking on the phone, Lisa and I are looking at each other, we're both practically crying. Our kids probably have no idea, but the best way to make us happy is not just to succeed in life, but to say, this is how God is using me. This is how God is impacting my life. I'm not just giving lip service to the gospel, but I'm actively serving the gospel. We were just so overcome with joy. There is really nothing like seeing God take your kid who was once a child, grow them into an adult, and see them impacting the world as a young adult. There really is nothing else like it.
It kind of makes that time of when they're little and you wonder, when is the fun going to begin? It makes that time kind of go a little bit easier, doesn't it, when you think about those sacrifices? I mean, you write a great chapter on just what needs to be sacrificed in order to be a parent, things you may not have thought about, whether it's personal time or money or resources or maybe an ambition that you had. There seems to be a lot of sacrifice that we didn't think about until we're actually there. So I'm hoping, Gary, that you say when you watch your child who's doing something in a way that's impacting the kingdom, some of those thoughts will come back to me, right?
Absolutely. And, you know, you mentioned sacrifice. I'm not one to naturally sacrifice. I mean, I didn't wake up and say, how do I sacrifice today?
Do any of us do that?
I don't think so, but it's the heart of the gospel. Present your bodies as living sacrifices. Christianity was birthed in sacrifice. We're called to sacrifice. And I think God's brilliance is that he gets us to wrap our hearts around these little kids who take up our time, take up a lot of our money, take up a lot of our sleep, and we just learn to sacrifice. And all the lessons we've been talking about this whole time, Joe, put it this way, if we've learned to deal with anger, we've learned to deal with fear, we've learned to sacrifice, we've learned to encourage imperfect people, when we come out of this, we're set up for just about any ministry God wants us to put us in, because that's exactly what it is to lead a church. By leading a church, again, I'm not talking about being senior pastor of a church. I'm just talking about small group, influencing others at a business, at a school, wherever you may be. Those lessons we learn in raising our kids are basically lessons of the kingdom, lessons of ministry that are applicable in so many different areas of life. That's why I just want us to have our eyes open. Okay, God is raising my kids, but he's also raising me. And how do I learn to grow as I'm helping my own children grow?
I feel like maybe we're being cooked very slowly in that pot of water where we don't really feel necessarily being burned, but we're going to come out at the end, aren't we? We're going to come out better and maybe done or close to done so that we can go impact the world even once our children are not around anymore. I mean, my parents are still impacting me in a big way, even though I no longer live with them, but they're impacting me through the way they teach my children, through how they help me even when I call to ask advice on parenting. they may laugh, but they'll give me some wise answer. And so it seems like our impact as parents gets to turn around a little bit once our kids are out of the house.
It does. You know, and I remember telling some friends about a decade ago, a little bit more than that, our kids were still at home. I was saying, you know, part of me wishes I could just start over now. I said, I just understand more. I just feel like I could be a better dad. I feel like I could understand what to focus on, what not to worry about, or what not. And I think they all agreed. But then when I was praying, I just sensed God challenging me. Well, what helped you become wiser? What made you more understand? It was the process of having kids. As God said, Gary, I'm glad you're focusing on giving your best to your kids. But see, I wanted to give you kids so that I could grow you too. God is growing all of us. And so we just recognize, you know, the gift that God gives to us, and really an astonishing sense of trust. When my daughter, my youngest daughter, turned 12, I took her and her closest friend to a trip to Disney. I was asked to speak down there, and it was Kelsey's 12th birthday, and so we did a bunch of Disney things besides the speaking. And I'll never forget the compliment, really, that the girl's mom gave me, because I said, well, can she eat this or that or whatever? She just said, Gary, look, I trust you. If I didn't trust you, our daughter wouldn't be going. For this weekend, she's your daughter. Whatever's okay for Kelsey is okay for her. And I was blown away that she said, okay, I'll entrust my daughter to you. Well, if you're a parent, whether through adoption or natural birth or foster, God is saying, these kids are precious to me. I adore them. I sent my son to die on the cross so they could be reconciled to me, and yet they're yours. For 18 years, you get to speak into their life, you get to protect them, you get to grow them. I know you're not perfect, but because I believe it's going to be good for you and them, here they go. Here you are. And it's amazing to me the trust God gives to us when we think about how much he loves the kids that he places in our houses.
Mm. Well, it's just such an honor to be a parent. I'm so, so glad that we did it, and I would do it again in a heartbeat. I don't want to say that too loud because I don't want to do it right now again in a heartbeat, but I'm just saying that it's been just one of the greatest joys of my life, as well as one of the greatest struggles. So I think that God's doing his work in me. I'm guessing that a lot of our listeners feel the same, Gary. Thanks so much for just taking this time to talk to us and inspire us with the great trust that God has put in us to be parents and to be developed as parents as well. How can people get a hold of you or learn more about you if they'd like to learn more about your other books?
The easiest way, if they can just remember my name, Gary Thomas, GaryThomas.com. There's the link to Twitter. I have a regular blog that comes out, mostly focused on marriage, a little bit on parenting, but more on marriage than anything. And they could look up all the books there, and you know, any Christian bookstore, Amazon would have those too.
Well, Gary, thanks so much for joining us today, and just blessings on whatever you're working on next. We appreciate your wisdom and that you can use your family to share your wisdom with us. We're grateful for that as well. Sacred Parenting is the book by Gary Thomas, How Raising Children Shapes Our Souls. Gary, thanks for joining us on Connecting Faith.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
We'll be right back. Welcome back to Connecting Faith. Boy, it's such a great, fun conversation with Gary Thomas, author of Sacred Parenting. And we have a few books of his to give away. If you've been listening to this conversation on parenting, you'd like to get one of those books in your hands, give us a call, 877-933-2484. Now, my conversation with Maria Goff, she also wrote just a great book, Love Lives Here, Finding What You Need in a World Telling You What You Want. And we have a few of her books to give away, too. So listen in on this conversation and give us a call if you'd like to get one of those. Maria, I think that mostly when I'm reading your book, what I see is that you were so intentional about creating this home for you, your husband, your children, where love was definitely felt. How did you start to say, hey, I'm going to make my home different so that it is that kind of a place?
You know, that I think started from this idea that I had of making a career out of loving my family. I just remember feeling really overwhelmed when the kids were little and not really sure what I needed to make things at home run smoothly, and was at the store with my kids one day, one of those big box stores, and had passed this wall of store signs on display that were for sale. And the one that caught my eye the most was the big black and white one that said "Help Wanted." And I took a look at it and I thought under my breath, I was like, boy, isn't that the truth? I think a lot of us at home will feel like, man, if I just really need some help here. So I bought that sign, I brought it home, and I stuck it in our front living room window. And then it occurred to me, it felt so official, like, oh my gosh, I feel like a store. And if somebody on the street saw that sign, they may come to the door and ask, you know, want to apply for a job. But what that did for me was give me a chance to really think about what it was that I needed help with, so that before Bob got home and would want to know how he could help, that I actually had an answer for it. A lot of times I think we just get so overwhelmed and stuck in that feeling of despair that we're not even sure how to ask for help. And part of asking for help is being able to articulate what you need. And it wasn't much. I didn't need like a new car or a new house or big drastic changes. What I really needed was somebody to just come help with the kids a couple hours a week. And that was it. But putting that "Help Wanted" sign in my front window kind of changed my filter for how I was seeing my job and my home. And I thought, I feel like I'm making a career out of raising my family. And it just started with that "Help Wanted" sign. And while Bob wants to change the world, I've always been focused on Homeland Security. That's been my thing. And so I'm pretty clear about that as far as, you know, when we make decisions, I'm always making sure that what we're doing fits for our family and everybody in it, much like how somebody would make decisions for a company running well. You know, you take in consideration, is this going to be good for the company? Is this going to be good for our family? So one of the ways that we were able to express that is through hospitality and inviting people into our homes. And we started with the people that live here and treating them the way that we would want to be treated when we can, you know, come in through the front door. It's like greeting my husband when he came home from work, or, you know, my kids when they come home from school, and how we treat each other. And it was just sort of a, you know, like kind of raising ourselves to a higher standard of respect and love for each other.
Well, and a lot of people know you as this kind of sweet, down-to-earth mom. And there is a great story, though, in your book about kind of letting your kids run away from home. Tell us a little bit about that story and why you allowed that type of adventure.
Sure. They were out in the backyard one day when they were just old enough to be able to play in the backyard. It was all fenced in and safe and everything. But then the back door was open and I could hear them. But after about an hour, they came running in the house with this great idea that they had come up with the three of them. And they had decided and announced to me in unison, "We want to run away." And they were just full of joy and excitement. And it kind of took me by surprise because, of course, as an adult, the thought of running away involves like leaving forever and living on the streets. And I knew that they were too little to survive that. And I was kind of hoping that Bob had been the one at home to be the first one to hear this, because he's such an adventurous person that that's just right up his alley. And I'm more of the one that wants to plan and organize. So in a split second, I had a choice to make, that either I was going to squash their idea and tell them why that was a bad one because they wouldn't survive out in the world, or I could just offer them my enthusiasm and my ability to plan and organize. So I offered to help them pack in the spirit of it all, of their make-believe fun. And we talked about what they might need and eat and what they would need to be warm. And I suggested Band-Aids in case somebody started bleeding. It was very cute. And they all collected their things in a bandana and tied it on a stick and marched out the back door. And to them, this big adventure that they had come up with was just to get on the cinder block wall that lined our property line and march down one side and around the other, and they were back by dinner. But I could see them the whole time through the back window. And all I could think of the whole time was how beautiful it was that they had decided to do something together. And my hope and prayer that day was that as they grew older and became adults, that they would still want to do something together, that they would know without a doubt that they had each other's back. and the depth of knowledge and familiarity that they had from being in the adventure together was something that they still carry with them today.
It's so nice to know that they may still have that bond, because I've noticed that as the kids grow, they aren't necessarily telling me their plans as much as they may be telling each other their plans. And then they don't get my wisdom of how many Band-Aids they should pack and what things they should consider anymore.
This is really true. But when, you know, as they get to know each other's strengths and weaknesses, and they understand each other's, you know, soft spots and buttons that they push on each other, it's so beautiful to see how they work that out as they grow older. And I feel like our job as their parents, and particularly as their mothers, is to just nurture that in them and help point out the strengths and weaknesses and soft spots and buttons. And I think a lot of that comes out when we're at home, because if we create an environment where we're really paying attention to each other, none of that gets lost. It's easier to nip things in the bud when we start to see, you know, habits and things that responses to each other that we might not want them to have, like being impatient or selfish, things like that. For me, it all comes out when we're at home, and that's been a really great learning ground, playground for us to learn this stuff on.
Do you look back and do you see some of that foundation that was planted back when they were in the home, or do you look and say, oh, I missed that one thing?
I think there's always things that we know that we've missed, but, you know, I believe that that's where, you know, the grace of God comes in, where he just smooths over all of those rough edges. I think all of our kids will need counseling. I'm pretty sure of it. And I don't mean that just for me. I just mean in a general statement, if we could all just be more accepting that we're not going to get it right 100%, and that at some point, you know, they're going to have to figure out what their gaps are, and hopefully they've left with enough tools in their tool belt to figure out what they need and get the help they need. And that comes from setting an example too. I'll tell you, Joe, when I was writing this book, things that came up in my life that I knew I wanted to share in the book were not necessarily things that I readily shared with my kids as they were growing up, because they were having a very different childhood. And so, you know, it was one of those things where I just kept praying that God would give me the wisdom to share with them when he thought it would be appropriate to share with them. And it was through the writing of this book. And so some of my childhood experiences and some of the things in my past, I've gotten a lot of help for most of them, but I needed to share with them before it was printed in a book. And that was a really beautiful moment in our family, when I could sit down with each of them and be as real as I needed to be, and as vulnerable with them first before I was with everybody else that now has the book and can read it. You know, when they were little, Bob and I chose them in the hopes that when they grew up, they would choose us.
God's love for you is perfect. You may know it in your head, but not in your heart and life. Hi, I'm Steve Douglas for Making Your Life Count. And Tanya Godsey describes how God's love became real to her.
It's just been a journey of accepting that God, he's the creator of all that we know and all that we see and all that we can't see. But you know what? The heart of who he is a father. He's a father, and he loves us with a father's love. It's just the best safety net that you could ever have. I feel like I can go out and I can try things and I can do things, and my worth isn't tied up into whether I succeed or whether I fail. It's tied up into my identity and being beloved by my Father.
Like Tanya, you can know in your heart and accept the truth that you are thoroughly loved by your perfect Heavenly Father.
Well, thanks so much for listening to Connecting Faith today. Just had two fun conversations today with Gary Thomas on sacred parenting, and also with Maria Goff on her book, Love Lives Here. If you were listening today and would like to get your hands on one of those books, well, we still have some left. You can go right to our website at myfaithradio.com, click on Connecting Faith, and there's a place where you can submit your name and your contact information, and Carissa will get back to you as soon as she can. Thanks again for listening to Connecting Faith. Neil is back tomorrow. He'll be talking to Dwight Nordstrom about his business ventures and the church in China. We're grateful that you took this time to listen to Connecting Faith. Have a great day.
Thanks for listening to this Connecting Faith podcast. These conversations are available because of listener support, and you can make a gift right now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of Connecting Faith, you can subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend and growing the awareness and impact of Connecting Faith.